At any given time, around 30,000 children and young people are in foster care. And yesterday, some of them got to speak with Bill Shorten, the Parliamentary Secretary for Disabilities and Children's Services. They gave him first-hand advice on how to improve the foster care system in Australia. The meeting was facilitated by CREATE, a group that advocates for young people in care. Joining me now are CREATE's Chief Executive Jackie Reid and 18-year-old Ivan Haynes from Tasmania. Welcome to you both.
Hi.
Hi.
Ivan, I want to start with you. Getting to tell your story, because you have been in foster care, I know you're not now, but getting to tell your story to Bill Shorten, that must have been a good thing. What did you tell him?
We spoke mainly on four main issues that came up through the summit, those being transitioning from care.
This is the youth summit that's been going on earlier this week.
Yeah, we've had 3 days in Sydney. 24 delegates from across Australia have been speaking. And we basically went through and worked out what the four main problems with the care system is at the moment.
Because the government's looking at this, isn't it?
Yes, at the moment they're really looking at it. It seems to be a problem that's reoccurring and they're now starting to take a real look at it and seeing what we have to say. So.
Well, Jackie, if I could bring you in, there were a whole range of recommendations. Let's begin with the importance of case planning.
Mm-hmm.
What happens and what needs to change?
Well, what we're seeing is that children and young people are telling us overwhelmingly from our studies that we did last year and our report card that they just either don't have case plans or when they do, they're not being involved in developing them. So some governments, as part of their reform, have sort of got systems whereby workers can't go into the next screen, for example, in their computers until the kids have got a case plan. So what happens is case plans are being written in quite some isolation in some states where they're written up just so that they can get to the next piece of work. So the young people are not necessarily involved in doing that.
This is one of the four problems that Ivan alluded to.
Absolutely.
I imagine that if you are writing up, with the best will in the world, just to keep things moving, you're writing up a case plan so that you can get things going, you end up with the kids being done to rather than done with.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. And sometimes, you know, you've got to get to know a child before you can start talking about their destiny in the world and what their best needs are. And because caseworkers are just so busy, often case plans, not only are they not drawn up to start with, but they're not really monitored effectively either.
Ivan, I'd imagine this is a kind of emerging theme that about the amount of consultation for the young person in care.
Absolutely. We find that in a lot of cases there are case plans. A lot of the times kids aren't even aware that they are there and we're not involved in any way with those plans. In saying that, it's not with everyone. It is only with, you know, some of the kids in care. I'm not going to say that it's everyone and it's a huge problem.
If it's happening to you, you really feel that, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. We don't have any control over our future. You know, with these case plans in place, all we have to do is basically go along for the ride no matter what it says.
What level of consultation do you think there should be in practical terms? Are we talking about a weekly conversation or what?
Well, we believe that at least 6 monthly it should be reviewed. Case plans are generally written up once a year. And
jeez, a lot can happen in a year.
Absolutely. You know, anyone else's life, you know, things change daily. And without those plans being reviewed and audited and looked at, you know, things could happen and we could get overlooked and, you know, we're the ones who suffer for it.
Mm-hmm. Jackie, all too often there's the story of young people being shunted from placement to placement to placement. What recommendations did you have for the Minister, Jenny Macklin? I know you saw Bill Shorten, mm-hmm. but you obviously have recommendations for the Minister mm-hmm. on how this could be improved.
Well, the constant moving of children and young people is something that is just endemic. It's not just in Australia, it's across the world. Mm. It's a real issue. Some countries obviously do it better than others. What we were saying to the minister was that we've got to start concentrating on relationships and we've got to start building relationships rather than looking at systems all the time, because foster carers at the moment are really being done to themselves. Like, we have an absolute over-reliance on foster carers and we have a shortage. So what happens is when you get a family in of children, you can't place them together. So often the kids are separated. Now, of course, the department's aim is to reunite siblings in one placement. So that's often a reason for the kids to be moved several times. Then there's other times when the carers are just full and they say, OK, we'll take them, but we can only have them for a couple of weeks. So the kids are on this merry-go-round until they actually find someone.
This isn't the intention, obviously, but it seems to me is what happens when process overwhelms people.
That's right.
So there's a plan, but at the ground level, yes. If you like, it doesn't feel like it.
No, it certainly doesn't. And it's for the foster carers, it must be very frustrating because they're often under a lot of pressure. Like, you know, can you take this kid just be for a few days? And they say yes. But then, of course, for the young person, it's another notch on their belt as, you know, another placement and another change and whatever to their routine.
On Life Matters today, we are talking about... Foster kids and young people having their say. Yesterday I got to speak to Bill Shorten, who's Parliamentary Secretary for Disabilities and Children's Services, and the government at the moment is looking at this whole issue of foster care. With me, Jackie Reid, who's Chief Executive of the CREATE Foundation, which advocates for young people in care, and also Ivan Haynes from Tasmania, who's a young man who's been in foster care. He isn't now. And you're 18, actually, Ivan, and one of the issues is the transition out of foster care at 18.
Yes.
You are concerned about how that is being handled at the moment.
Absolutely. At the moment, for a lot of kids in care, we're basically told at about our 17th or even halfway through our 17th year that we're going to be leaving at 18 and, you know, here's a bag full of stuff and off you go. Which it's really hard. You know, we don't have a lot of the time the life skills to go out and, you know, get bond, get a house. You know, and so for a lot of people,
completely different to what would happen in a normal family environment.
Absolutely.
As their parents might feel like it, they don't do it.
Well, I mean, if you look at the statistics now, kids aren't leaving home till they're 25.
Yeah.
You know, and for us to be kicked out at 18 where, you know, a lot of the times we have been shunted from house to house and not really having a stable environment to learn, you know, budgeting, cooking, the basic life skills that we need to survive. When we're kicked out at 18, it's sort of a big shock to us. And, I mean, all you got to do is look at the amount of homeless people to realise that there's obviously a problem in this area.
Especially with the rental crisis. Private rental property is very expensive at the moment.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I'm lucky I've got a house now. It took me a long time to get a house. But I mean, even in Tasmania, which is, you know, generally quite a lot more cheaper than in Sydney or Melbourne, you know, it's still costing me quite a bit each week, and not having those basic life skills like budgeting is a huge thing for me. If I hadn't been taught budgeting, then I'd be.
it really goes to the difference between, you know, being in a normal family environment and not, because I don't think most 18-year-olds, when they finish school, have most of those life skills either. But because they're not going until they're older, or because they can always, for the most part, come back and get their laundry done and things like that, they have time to acquire them. And whereas in foster care, you're out of the system and off you go.
Yeah.
And one of the things is getting a licence, getting proper ID. That's an issue too, isn't it?
It is a huge issue. It took me quite a few months to get a copy of my birth certificate, which is, it's a basic requirement. Mm. You know, if you want to get a bank card, if you want to get your driver's license, any of those basic things, you need your birth certificate. And a lot of the times we've got to go in and get a signed piece of paper just so that we can go and get these things done, which is a huge hassle. We should be able to, at our 15th or 16th birthday, be able to get all these documents from the department so that we can go and get them. You know, our Medicare cards, healthcare cards, our birth certificates, so that when these things come up, it doesn't provide as much a hassle.
Exactly. Jackie Reid from CREATE, let's talk about the wider issue. Your statistics say out-of-home care has gone up by 115% the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
Why such a sharp increase?
There's a lot of debate, I guess, around the reasons why. Part of it is because we've had such massive reform and many, many inquiries and commissions and whatever into this area, and it heightens awareness. And, of course, then we become very risk-averse. So we end up with a lot more notifications, and the figures are bumped up from that because we're being cautious.
Mm-hmm.
And the second sort of consideration in those figures rising is the fact that we have an endemic of drug and alcohol issues, and that's quite internationally prevalent.
What about prevention? How do we get to those most vulnerable families before they're in a situation where kids are
and
moved
look, the
out?
The key is, like internationally, we know, and Dorothy Scott and many other researchers are sort of looking at or highlighting the real need for us to be looking at early intervention.
Yes.
Because it's just absolutely necessary. We have to get better at that. Like, if we put all our resources and money into keeping children and young people with their families where they can and safely, with some support, we would have a much better outcome for the children, because our system in foster care is overloaded. We're supposed to take children off parents who are abusing their children and give them a better life. But at the moment, I reckon there would be a lot of children and young people in care that might not agree with that.
Well, indeed. And the problem with early intervention, and it's clear how, it's increasingly clear how important and effective it is, but there's now evidence that says that early intervention ought to start before birth with some families.
Yes.
So, I mean, and in the meantime, you've got an eight-year-old who needs help.
Mm.
You're lobbying for a national framework for children in care.
Yes.
How would it work?
We have the federal government at the moment are working on a national framework, and there's a whole range of key stakeholders in that are under a consultation kind of process. Basically, that's across all children and young people. It's not just for children and young people in foster care and creates at that table. What we are saying is that we need national standards. So we would like to see that, like across Australia at the moment, we don't even have the same in every state and territory how old a child is in care. There's great debates. Could be 18 in some states, Tasmania. In some states it's 21, in some states it's 25. So creates advocating really strongly that we need to have a national age where children and young people can be supported until they're 25.
Is any state doing that at the moment?
There are a couple of states that sort of provide this discretionary power up until the children and young people are 25. So it would be, it would be those states that we would be looking at saying, well, what kind of support would you provide? And it's really about allowing kids to stay in the foster placement that they may well have been in for many years and quite settled, but foster carers are paid only an allowance. So when the child turns 18, if they've got a really strong connection with that child and they're able, the kids often stay in that placement. However, if that foster carer is unable financially to be able to do that, and they're doing this as a, you know, they put one child leaves, another one comes in, which is the way the system needs it to be, then that young person basically is left by themselves. And we're sort of referring that to the sort of a jettison effect.
What would be the most useful in terms of support? You're 18. What would be great for you between now and, say, 25?
It'd be great to have a point of contact still. You know, if it's with our foster carers, or still having someone within the department who we can go to when we've got a problem, if we need help with obviously getting bond, getting details, getting in touch with our natural families, all that sort of stuff. Even if we had someone who we could go back to till we're 25 and go, look, this is what's happening in my life. I really need some help with this. Can you either help me out, or is there someone who you can suggest who can do it? There's lots of non-government organisations.
That is really, that's not just a phone number, but that's a relationship with somebody, isn't it?
It is. And natural families have that. You know, they go back to their mum and dad and go, oh, you know, this has gone wrong. What am I going to do?
Can you lend me $200?
That's right.
actually, in money, that makes me think of money, Jackie. Mm. If the foster care system is overloaded, and we know it is, do foster carers need to be paid more by the government? Because I know that there's not much consistency between the states.
Mm. And I think that's something that they need to look at as a national standard as well, to make sure that, like, generally the cost of living across Australia is pretty static. Some, you might argue, some states would be more expensive to live in than others. But there should be a cost indicator about how much it costs to raise a child, which they do every year when kids go back to school. So we should be applying some kind of economic rationale that determines how much it costs to bring up a child, and that's what they should be paid, not an allowance to cover the cost of incidentals. It's just outrageous. I'm not saying that it would improve the system or it would attract more people to it, but it's about being fair and reasonable to make sure that the kids have what they need to be supported.
You've given all these recommendations to the government, to the minister. What next? Did Did anyone make any promises to you?
Basically, we've put them aware that we are going to be out there lobbying again, that we've given them all the CD. We worked really hard to get the CD to them that day. So all the kids' words and all their recommendations were given to them on the spot last night at our summit dinner. So a representative from each state took that DVD back with a commitment that they would take it back and say, this is the voice of children and young people to their states. And then we'll follow up with them within 10 days to be making appointments to see ministers to talk to them about the issues that were raised by young people.
All right, that's where we'll leave it. Good luck with it, and thank you both of you for joining me, coming in here today. That's Jackie Reed, Chief Executive of Create Foundation. They're an advocacy group for young people in care. And Ivan Haynes, who's lived in foster care himself, and spoke with Bill Shorten yesterday about ways to improve the system in Australia. And look, next week on Life Matters, we'll get another perspective on the foster care equation. The carers, they don't do it for the money. Some are worn down by the system they're forced to operate in. Now, coming up next on Life Matters, Project Uplift, getting bras to women in the Pacific who really need them.